Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Shlom. Back in 1980, I was on a trip to southern Utah and headed down my favorite scenic drive in California, Highway 395 in the Eastern Sierra. We stopped at a special place near Mammoth Lakes. Hot Creek flowed tranquilly through a small canyon of sand-colored rock with the mighty Sierra escarpment as the background. Hot springs and colorful mineral formations made it a dazzling scene, and they still do. But thanks to a Canadian mining company wanting to explore the area to potentially develop a gold mine, this scenic area is under a significant threat. Hot Creek isn't just a geologic wonderland, it's also home to a world-renowned trout fishery for fly fishers who come there from all over the world. The famed Western writer Zane Grey fished there and fell in love with its charms. It's truly a natural treasure for anglers, hikers, bicyclists, and adventurers visiting the Mammoth Lakes region. In this show, we'll learn about this special place and what's at stake if an open-pit gold mine disrupts it. Later on, we'll examine the fascinating volcanic history and why gold would be found there with Jeff Ludlow, geologist for California Fly Fisher magazine. And we'll learn about the fight against the mining operation being coordinated by citizens and businesses in the region with Emily Markstein, co-founder of the nonprofit No Hot Creek Mine Organization. But first, to find out about the history and special fishery that is Hot Creek, we're joined by Kevin Peterson. Kevin is the operations manager of the famous Hot Creek Ranch Fly Fishing Resort. Kevin has guided fly fishers for decades on this scenic trout stream, and he lives there, so it's truly a special place to him personally and the many visitors over the years that have come to the ranch. Kevin Peterson, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Well, before we get going, I just have to say, you live in one of the most spectacularly beautiful places I've ever been in my life. It must be neat to live there.
We're certainly blessed, that's for sure. My wife and I walk our dogs every morning, and I always tell her, if I ever get tired of that view, just shoot me. I'm done.
It is a view worth seeing, and we'll talk more about that view in a bit. But I'd like to know a little bit about yourself and how you came to be the operations manager there at Hot Creek Ranch.
Well, I used to guide this ranch back when I was just a full-time guide, which I've been for 42 years. Moved to Mammoth in 82 and had been coming up here for years before that, and just came to Hot Creek to fish and absolutely fell in love with the area, Hot Creek in particular, but you know, the town and the people, and moved up here in 82. So you know, I've been guiding for most of that time, and I was the chair of the Mono County's Fisheries Commission for 4 years, president and founding member of the Eastern Sierra Fishing Guides Association, as well as co-owner of the Trout Fly and Trout Fitter fly shops in town. So pretty embedded in the fly fishing world, and it's a major part of my life.
And people come there for all kinds of reasons. I'm not just talking specifically about your ranch and the fly fishing there, but to Hot Creek. It's a geologic wonderland. Could you maybe comment on, you know, how many people from all over the world love to visit there?
Yeah, my wife and I were talking about this the other day. The road that leads past the ranch and down to the swimming area and the, the geological site, is rarely do you see it without a car or many cars on it. People are just drawn to it, and people that have been there tell their friends about it, and they tell their friends. And not only is there a little swimming area, but people walk dogs, ride bikes, hike, photograph. I mean, it's probably one of the most photographed areas in California,
if not the world.
Yeah,
it's just amazing. And it's interesting. I think back to that time, and I remember that the skiers up at Mammoth Mountain would come down, and it's named Hot Creek for a reason. It's a geothermal area, and the water there can be very hot in places, too hot to be getting into.
Yep.
But there were places where you'd see the skiers in there doing the natural hot tub thing, you know, yep, in the evenings.
Yeah, very popular.
Well, you are there because it's a fly fishery, And I'd like you to comment on what makes it such a special place from the aspect of fishing and fly fishing in particular.
Well, for one thing, it's they call it a blue ribbon trout stream, just meaning that it's full of wild brown trout and rainbow trout. It's a designated wild trout fishery, which means that it doesn't get stocked. Everything is, hatched right here in the creek. So not only are they, plentiful, and there's more food than you can imagine, and because it's a spring creek. And so the fish are just fat and healthy and gorgeous. They're not like the stalkers out of the hatchery that at times can look kind of beat up and scratched and tails chewed off and the like. They're just incredibly beautiful wild fish.
Well, and there's also some just awesome history there. For example, Zane Grey, the famous Western writer, came there, and I think he made some comment that this is the most magnificent place he'd ever seen. So, and Hollywood's been there. Talk a little bit about some of the cool history there.
Well, Zane Grey used to be a guest at the ranch. There is a fly plate with, I think there's 24 flies in there, that was donated to the ranch by Zane Grey. And it's pretty spectacular. It's a really awesome piece of history.
When would that be have been?
I think back in the 40s, probably.
Wow.
Maybe 50s.
Oh, that's cool.
But as I understand, I never actually spoke to the owner that hung out with him, the owner at that time of the ranch. But passed down, I hear that he was just a really great guy and just absolutely loved it here. It was his little slice of heaven.
How long has Hot Creek Ranch been there as a place for people to go fly fish?
Well, it was homesteaded by a Paiute Native American back, in the late 1800s. And it was much bigger at that time. I think he homesteaded 800 acres. Then it went through a couple of different sales. The family that owns the ranch at this time bought it in the late 60s, but had been coming here since the late 40s as guests, and then bought it from the owner at that time. And so they did a land trade with the Forest Service, and we now have 200 acres of prime creek. And they got some office buildings in LA and things like that. So from 800 to 2, but it's those 200 acres are the prime creek, beautiful. I mean, people come here and you see them open the gate from the city, and you just watch the city melt off them as they open the gate. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's magical.
Yep.
And I mentioned Hollywood. I remember the first time watching Nevada Smith with Steve McQueen, and Carl Malden was the bad guy in that movie. And he really was a bad guy. And I remember watching, the final scenes where Carl meets his demise justly because he'd done some horrible things to Nevada Smith's parents. But I remember watching that going, I know where that is.
It's right downstream from the ranch. It's on the public section. And it's, there's a rock there that's very distinct. And Carl Malden is laying there half in and half in the water and half out. And he's just finish me. Just shoot me. It was. Wow. Every time I go by that rock, it reminds me of that scene. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then another famous Western, True Grit.
Yep.
With John Wayne.
Yeah.
There's a scene that's shot right there, too, isn't
there?
There's
quite a few scenes, actually. And the owners of the ranch were here when they were shooting that. And I guess John Wayne came to the ranch and they had lunch, and he just fell in love with the whole area. But I guess he supposedly, came to the ranch and was awestruck by the beauty of it as well.
It is a spectacular part of California. And what always amazes me when I talk to my fellow Californians is how few people have actually been over to that side of the Sierra Nevada mountains, have driven down Highway 395 from Reno to Los Angeles. And that stretch, especially oh, from like Walker, that area through there, down through Bridgeport to Mammoth Lakes to Bishop and Lone Pine, where they've shot a bazillion Westerns. It's just the most spectacular drive in the United States.
Yep.
And especially in California, and people always talk about Highway 1 and how special that is. And I tell them, yeah. But when you're driving Highway 1, you got to keep your eyes on the road so much you can't even look at the scenery.
Right. You don't want to drive off that cliff.
Yeah. And 395, you've just got the most spectacular scenery, you know, in the world.
It truly is. My wife and I had a home up in Mount Shasta, Northern California, for several years. And we would invite friends down from up there. And they were so proud of how beautiful their area is, which it is. But they would come here and just go, wow, can't believe how spectacular and grandiose. And yeah, it just they're always just shocked by the beauty of this area, this place.
I always tell people, if you watch TV for any length of time during a day, there's a very good chance you're going to see a commercial from a car company that was shot in that area.
Yep.
Because it's so spectacular.
Yep. They do them. I mean, we see them being filmed here all the time. And I recognize, you know, the area in a lot of different commercials. And, you know, we were talking about people that come here. David E. Kelly, who was, you know, for many years had shows all over TV, married to Michelle Pfeiffer. And he came to the ranch quite a few times. And, yeah, he was always just shocked and in awe about how beautiful the ranch and the area is. And
well, your beautiful property and the wonders of Hot Creek and its amazing geology, the geothermal area, it's the spectacular scenery. It's under threat, and we're going to learn more about that on this program. But I just, you know, I wonder, what are your feelings about this proposed mine? And this operation that is definitely a threat to, you know, where you live.
Oh, it's a huge threat. And I've been fighting it tooth, fang, and nail, doing anything that I can to try to get the Forest Service to not allow this. But, you know, we thought we had them beat at one time. And now the current administration is more about drill, baby, drill, and mine, baby, mine, which, you know, I'm fine with, except... And when it impacts an incredible, beautiful area like this, you know, it's one thing in the desert of Nevada, and it's another thing at Hot Creek. When I look out my window, my office window, there are 14 drill sites out there, and I can see four of them from my window.
Oh, wow.
So if that happens, which I'm afraid they're going to probably allow the exploration drilling, which was based on a exclusion, an 1872 law that allows people to explore their claims. And so that's kind of where this is all based on. So their chances are very good that they're going to allow them to at least explore, which would be awful, but I can't imagine anyone allowing a giant pit mine the size of a football stadium or bigger running 24/7. I can't imagine that happening back there. And if it did, it would be absolutely devastating to this area, not only from, you know, the beauty, but the noise. And I want to know where they're going to get the water. Takes a lot of water to run an operation like that. So a lot of questions.
Yes. And of course, you're in the high desert and there isn't a lot of water there.
No. And the city of Los Angeles, the Department of Water and Power, own most of the water rights around here in one way or another. I mean, we have the water rights to the water that, you know, on this ranch, we have several springs. But once it gets into the mainstream and heads south, it belongs to LA.
Yeah, the Owens River.
Yep. So, you know, I've been surprised that LADWP has not been involved in this, but I have a feeling that they're just keeping their powder dry until they really need to get involved. If it's really going to happen, they have deep pockets, guns and money, lawyers. And so hopefully if this does start happening, that they can jump in and you know, pull some of their weight and you know, do what we can to not let this mine happen anyway.
Well, my hope is that this program will at least let lots more people know that this very special place is under threat. Well, before we let you go, Kevin, what's your favorite thing about, you know, being there and being a guide and just living there at Hot Creek Ranch. What's your favorite thing about your life there?
Well, everything. You know, when I wake up in the morning and I look out the window and I see Mammoth Mountain, and I get up to have a cup of coffee and I look out my other window and I see Hot Creek running 100 feet from my house, you know, I just realize how blessed I am.
Well, it is, as I said, truly one of the most spectacular places in California and the Western United States.
Yep.
I would say anybody who's never been there should definitely go drive down 395 and go experience that, because it is just a wonderful, beautiful place.
Yeah, it's not to be missed, that's for sure.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for spending the time with us and sharing what's going on at Hot Creek Ranch and the threat to it. And we will stay in touch and keep everybody posted on this.
Well, thank you very much for getting the word out and, you know, doing what we can to make people aware and hopefully, you know, not let this happen. Thank you.
Thanks to our guest, Kevin Peterson, Operations Manager at Hot Creek Ranch. We're going to take a short break, but stay with us when we return. We'll continue our look at the natural wonders of Hot Creek near Mammoth Lakes in Eastern California and the threat that it's under from a proposed gold mining operation. I'm Dave Schlom, and you are listening to Blue Dot. Hello there, Blue Dot listener. I wanted to take a moment to thank you personally for listening to our podcast version of the show. Be sure to check out our archive podcasts at mynspr.org. And if you haven't already, be sure to support this program by becoming a member of North State Public Radio or the NPR station that you listen to. And now back to our episode about the beauty of Hot Creek in the Eastern Sierra and why we should all be concerned about a proposed mining operation there. And we're back, and thanks for listening to Blue Dot. Now let's turn our attention to the incredible geologic setting of Hot Creek in the Eastern Sierra Nevada with our next guest, Jeff Ludlow. Jeff recently wrote an article profiling the geology of the Long Valley Caldera where Hot Creek flows for California Fly Fisher magazine, and he joins us now. Jeff Ludlow, welcome once again to Blue Dot.
Thank you, Dave. Glad to be here.
I'm just curious, have you been to the Hot Creek area in that part of the world, the Long Valley Caldera?
Gosh, many years ago, back in my college days, I did a trip up and down 395 exploring some of the geologic wonders of the area. But even though it was 40 years ago, I still have fond memories and can picture the place in my mind.
Do you remember how striking it, you know, it is on first meeting it? Because I have the same kind of memories.
I do. And you know, as a geology student at the time, what was really striking were all of these volcanic features, which we'll talk about shortly, right juxtaposed to the massive granitic formations of the Sierra Nevada. So that was really interesting for me as a young geologist.
It's like Disneyland for a geologist.
Yeah, there's a fair amount going on for sure. Lots of rides.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the geology of there. This is one of the most volcanically active regions in California, the Long Valley Caldera. Give us just a little overview of the eruptive history there and why that's there. And when you drive through it, you might not realize that you're in a volcanic formation unless you're somebody like you that understands what you're looking at.
So the Long Valley Caldera really is, as the name suggests, it's a vast cauldron-shaped depression in the area through which the Owens River and Hot Creek and Mammoth Creek flow. And it was formed about 750,000 years ago, shortly after a massive volcanic eruption emptied the magma chamber and caused the whole region to collapse, you know, covering roughly 200 square miles. So it, to your point, Dave, it isn't recognizably visible as a volcano like you would see the Cascades, but it's a big, vast cauldron that really is one of the largest in North America, I think probably second to Yellowstone National Park, which is another example of a volcanic caldera with lots of hydrothermal activity, which we'll talk about shortly.
So give us a sense of, you know, the scope, the size of this eruption.
Well, again, it was a catastrophic eruption that emptied the magma chamber, and estimates at the time are there nearly 150 cubic miles of magma catastrophically erupted from the volcano, causing it to collapse, and then forming the caldera that we see today. When you compare that to something a little bit more historical, remember Mount St. Helens erupted back in the, I guess it was 1980. That eruption, which was catastrophic, as we all saw, only released 3/10 of a cubic mile of material. So when you compare 150 cubic miles of material that was erupted versus 3/10, it gives you a sense of scale of truly how catastrophic this eruption was.
Yeah, that ash was spread all over the western United States, and that layer of hot welded ash and rock there, the Bishop Tuff that you see as you're driving up out of Bishop towards Mammoth Lakes, it's just striking how thick that is. And then the Owens River Gorge goes right through that. It's very spectacular.
Yeah, it truly is. You know, the ground surface, when there was the old volcano before the caldera, and after the eruption, the ground surface dropped as much as a little over a mile in elevation. So it gives you the sense of how much earth was displaced. But obviously, it's not a mile deep now. So much of that material did fall back into the caldera, the Bishop Tuff, as you mentioned, Dave. But the lighter particles, the ashes, drifted with the winds and it was found all the way back in the Midwest.
Well, let's talk about Hot Creek itself, because it's a geological wonder area all its own. It's a site you can go to and visit. Tell us about why it's so unique and why those hot springs are there.
Right. Well, so volcanism in that region didn't stop with the catastrophic eruption 750,000 years ago. What has happened since is a new magma chamber is starting to form beneath the caldera and created what's called a resurgent dome, meaning the magma chamber starting to push up onto the Earth's crust again, creating a new dome within the old caldera. And as a result, a lot of hydrothermal activity, which we can talk about in detail, is shown at the surface in Hot Creek and the different fumaroles and hot springs and gas vents and such of the area are expressed.
And yeah, tell us about the different things that you would see if you go there, because it's not just hot water. It's got some very unique formations in there.
Right. So first, you know, how did the water get there? The eastern Sierra Nevada has a large snowpack, and the water will melt and it'll percolate down into the ground and it'll get into the porous lava rocks, the basalt, and travel east towards the Long Valley Caldera. And as that water travels east through the basalt rocks, it encounters the resident heat from the resurgent dome, the magma chamber down below. And so it heats up. And as it goes up in elevation, as the ground surface drops and the water continues down in the caldera, the release of pressure from being shallower causes it to boil. So, you know, you can have hot water, but if it's under a lot of pressure, like in a pressure cooker, it won't boil. But as you start to release that pressure, it will boil. And so that's where you will see the hot springs that will bubble out of the ground. You will see fumaroles, which are gas vents. Some of them it will mix with some old lake deposits that are more recent in the area, lacustrine deposits, and form these boiling mud pots that look like a thick stew cooking on your stovetop.
Yeah, and there's also some just incredible colors in there when you go there.
Right. So with that is a lot with hot water coming from magma chambers, you have a lot of minerals that get dissolved in the hot solution. And when it starts to boil, these minerals will start to precipitate. Minerals like arsenic and irons and sulfide minerals and such. So there's where you'll get your rainbow of colors of different minerals that form.
Yes, and for people who go there to soak in the hot springs, there are places where it's very dangerous to do that. Isn't that true?
Yeah, it's a dynamic system. This is not stagnant geology, right? The change in pressures from beneath the ground, water pressures or gas pressures, the temperature can vary widely. So you could scald yourself, you could be exposed to sulfuric gases and acidic gases and such. And it really isn't a place that you want to take lightly when you go to have an immersive experience in these springs.
It's not just a hot tub provided by nature. Yeah.
No.
Okay. No. Well, you talked about minerals coming up to the surface because of those hot springs. Explain to us why they are searching for gold there.
Right. So we know that there's exploration that's occurred in the area for gold mines by core mining. And with that exploration, they've identified the same geologic features that that we've discussed. And so the gold that is deposited in the area comes from the same mineralization process we spoke of on how these hot springs were formed. The deposits are mostly in the center of the caldera. They're in the lacustrine or lake sediment area of it. And with this resurgent dome, the rhyolite, which is a type of magma similar to basalt, rose in the crust, creating this superheated water with all these dissolved minerals, including gold and silver. And as that hot water gets shallower and the pressure is released and starts to boil, these minerals will start to precipitate. The gold and silver will precipitate into the host rock or these lake deposits. And they will precipitate in different zones or layers. And that's the area that's enriched with these precious metals that's of interest.
And can you give us a sense of what an operation would be like if they are trying to mine that there? What would that look like?
Well, so the way that the gold was mineralized, it was sort of a regional strata area that covers a pretty broad zone from the studies that were done that are up to 8,000 feet in length and could be as wide as 1,500 feet. So it's not as if you could just bore a tunnel into the ground and extract a vein of gold. So what this means is they have to create an open pit mine. They need to excavate the earth within that footprint of roughly 8,000 feet by 1,500 feet into an open pit mine and extract the mineralized zones from an open pit, and then take the material and process it to recover the gold.
Yeah, and you were telling me earlier that you've been looking at some of the publications about what they're planning to do there. Could you give us a sense of that?
Sure. So with the excavated material, the ore body, if you will, they'll crush it to a particular grain size, and they'll place it in very, very large stockpiles of material that they call cells or heap heights. And the early studies have suggested that the lifts of these cells or heights would be as great as 328 feet in height. And once they do that, they create a cell, they would add a dilute cyanide solution and sprinkle it on the top of the heap cell and percolate it through the entire cell of ore, and the cyanide will actually dissolve the gold and silver out of the ore rock. And then at the base of this cell, they'll have a collection system, a horizontal collection system, which will collect this cyanide solution that's enriched in gold and silver and pipe it off to another part of the process and then recover the gold from that solution.
Yeah, well, when I hear cyanide, that makes me think of water quality. This is a place with pristine water. Hot Creek is part of that. And then that flows into the Owens River. And that's part of the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power's water system. That water goes directly to Southern California for drinking water. I can't imagine this would have zero environmental impacts.
Correct. And not only human exposure, but ecological. The bird species and the animal species and the fish species in the area could also be negatively impacted by these operations with handling of the cyanide material.
And can you give us a sense of, like, how long a time period would it take them to go from just the exploration phase to starting to, you know, do an open pit mine? I just can't wrap my head around how awful that might be.
Well, it's a process for sure. I don't believe they have finished with all the studies that they would like to perform to fine tune the extent of the ore body and the different extraction volumes and processing. And then, of course, there's the permitting process that they'll have to work through in compliance with environmental impact reports, CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act, and all the different stakeholders are going to have a say in it. So this isn't something that happens fast, but it is a process that needs to be carefully studied and understood from many different stakeholders' perspective.
Well, then back to the caldera itself, because it is one of the most active volcanic areas in the West, in California for sure. I know the United States Geological Survey, they monitor it very closely. And, you know, you mentioned the eruption of Mount St. Helens earlier in 1980. It was at about the same exact time that area was having a lot of earthquakes, and there was a big concern back then that this region might be reactivating and an eruption might happen.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And so when you think about the design of an open pit mine and cells of ore body that would be 328 feet tall with collection systems underneath, how are those things going to be protected in the event of a massive earthquake or a volcanic eruption, right? So there's a lot to consider, not just the physical use of the material, but how could the environment impact the operations negatively?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I remember back then there was a lot of pushback from the community of Mammoth Lakes worrying about, well, you're alarming people about this possible eruption, bad for business kind of thing. It is kind of ironic and interesting. There's a road that goes out of Mammoth that reconnects with Highway 395. It's called the Scenic Route, something like that. It's the scenic byway takes you around 395, and as I have researched, that was actually constructed as an escape route.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Benton Crossing Road is the one that links a lot of these public hot springs we were discussing earlier with 395, and that's on the southeast side of the Resurgent Dome, and I believe that's the area where Core Mining is studying their possible gold mine.
Yeah, well, the scenic route I'm talking about goes north and reconnects to 395. It's not very. The interesting thing is when you go on it, it's all beautiful there, but it's not particularly scenic. So it's like, why did they name it this? And then I researched it and was like, oh, they wanted to make sure there was more than one way out, which is smart. You know, right. We've seen from things like what happened in Paradise, California, in the campfire, you need to have more than one way out of a community if there's something bad happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Jeff Ludlow, thanks for joining us to talk about the Long Valley Caldera, which is the home of Hot Creek. Any last thoughts on, you know, why this is such a special place?
Well, I think the volcanic nature of it is really quite unique. When you look at the size of the caldera, it is truly one of the largest in North America in terms of the eruption. The beneficial uses that come from these hydrothermal springs, right? We have the Casa Diablo geothermal plant, which is a renewable energy resource, which is really important for the environment in our communities. The Hot Creek State Fish Hatchery utilizes this hot water to temper their hatchery water during cold months to maintain ideal temperature for fish growth. So it really is a unique place that's taken some positive advantages of the geologic history.
Well, Jeff Ludlow, geologist for California Fly Fisher magazine, thanks for joining us and for sharing your knowledge about this very special part of California.
My pleasure, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to our guest, geologist Jeff Ludlow, regular contributor to California Fly Fisher magazine. Let's take a break, but be sure to stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by the co-founder of an organization trying to fight against the proposed Hot Creek mine, which threatens one of California's natural treasures, Hot Creek, near Mammoth Lakes. I'm Dave Schloem, and you are listening to Blue Dot. I hope you're enjoying this episode about the majestic beauty of Hot Creek in the eastern Sierra Nevada and why it's under threat by a proposed mining operation. Thank you for listening, and I sincerely hope you're a supporter of the show and North State Public Radio, where we produce it every week. NSPR needs financial support from listeners like you. You can help us continue our work by donating at mynspr.org. And now, back to the show. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Now let's turn our attention to a grassroots organization that's seeking to both raise awareness and fight against a proposed gold mining operation next to Hot Creek in California's magnificent Eastern Sierra region. Emily Markstein is the co-founder of the nonprofit No Hot Creek Mine Organization, and she joins us now. Emily Markstein, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here today.
Well, I'd like to know a little bit about you before we get into the mine controversy and all that. You've had an interesting journey to the Eastern Sierra in Eastern California by way of the East Coast and Scotland. So tell us about kind of how you got there.
Yeah, so I grew up in upstate New York. Both my parents were teachers, and my dad actually used to be pretty involved in the environmental movement. So I've been exposed to a lot of this my whole life. And then I went to college in upstate New York. And then I ended up going to grad school in Scotland. I really wanted to travel, but I also wanted to continue my education. So I had a professor in undergrad that was like, why don't you go to school abroad? And so I did. And then after grad school, I moved to Vermont, where I worked for Eco AmeriCorps, which was amazing and one of the best experiences I've ever had. And then I, at 25, was feeling a little burnt out. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to go be a ski bum. So I moved to Mammoth, fully intending to just work one winter out here. And here we are 8 years later, and I'm still here.
That's awesome. Well, tell me about the group you've founded, because I find that very inspiring. And when I found out about this issue, I became very alarmed. So I'd like you to tell us about what is the basic issue going on there, and why did you found your group?
So I'd been living in Mammoth for a couple of years, and I was really missing the work that I had been doing in Vermont, working on environmental issues. And my friend Amber and I, we used to go on these weekly bike rides, and we would always talk about how we wish we could combine this sort of intrinsic love for cycling with sort of like the issues we were seeing in the world and also right here in the Eastern Sierra. And then Amber saw this little two-line blurb in the paper that the Forest Service was accepting public comment about a mining proposal at Hot Creek, and we decided to just have a protest in Mammoth. We had never done anything like that. And then a couple of folks we met at the protest reached out to us afterwards, and there was five of us that originally founded No Hot Creek Mine. This was in 2021, and we were fighting this project until 2024 when a lawsuit was won that defeated the mining company and the Forest Service. And then with recent changes in the federal government, the mining company reapplied and resubmitted their proposal for this mining project. So I pulled my tub back out that was filled with stickers and sign-up sheets, opened it back up, put my t-shirt back on, and here we are again.
What makes Hot Creek special to you?
When you go to Hot Creek and, you know, you go out to the viewpoint and you're just in awe at the size of the mountains, but it's really when you walk down to the creek and there's this sense of peace, there's this deep connection to nature. There's no cell phone service down there. You can really just sit with yourself and with the water. And there's so many wildlife down there. And just you get this really deep connection and this sense of connection with nature that just really inspires one to take action and protect these places. And, you know, if I ever have a bad day, I go out to Hot Creek and I go down to the water. And it just reminds me that this place and the world that we live in is incredibly beautiful, and it's worth protecting.
Yes, it's a stunningly beautiful place. What is the current status of the threat to Hot Creek from this proposed mine? Tell us what's going on right now.
So right now we are actually sort of in this liminal space. This time, as compared to the first, there was no public comment period. So we haven't seen the mining company's exact project proposal. We do know that it's quite similar to last time with some changes. So we can mostly speculate on what they are going to be doing out there. And we are currently waiting for the Forest Service to make their public announcement on their final decision about the proposal from Coeur Mining.
And could put this in perspective for us, because if something were to happen to Hot Creek, you know, that mine was to go through, and it would not be good for the environment there. But there's a lot of tourism dollars, and there's a lot of people that are dependent on the natural resources around the Mammoth area and Hot Creek in particular. For people who are not familiar with that area, tell us how important it is, you know, for people all over the world like to come there and visit it and fish it and hike there.
Yeah, so Hot Creek is a world-renowned fishing destination. We have folks that come to Hot Creek not just to fish, but people come from all over the globe to visit here, to marvel at the mountains, to find peace and quiet in our open spaces and our public lands. And there's also a lot of people that rely on the income, whether they are a fly fishing guide at Hot Creek or they are working at a coffee shop in Mammoth. Our economy is a tourist-based economy. And we really, this came very clear to everybody here during COVID when everything shut down. But any impact to that pristine landscape, the quiet serenity, the water, our clean air, our beautiful dark desert skies, that's going to directly impact our local economy, because people aren't going to want to visit if they come here to get in the hot springs and they just have lights blaring in their face. They can hear the noise of the drills. It's really going to have a direct impact on everybody in this town and how they make their income.
And there's a lot of special plants and animals that live there. It's really a unique place. Can you tell us a bit about, you know, the threat to some of the nature that's there?
Yeah, so we have the bi-state sage grouse here. They actually have some protections in that they have a lekking period, which is thus just the time their time when they're breeding. So the mining company actually isn't allowed to start drilling until July 1st. So there is some protections. However, we have dwindling numbers of this species, and they live in this area sort of on that California-Nevada border. And if they're already facing dwindling numbers, when they have that noise, that light, that dust, they're going to be pushed out of that area. And it also is going to impact where they breed as well.
You've kind of got a coalition of people together from all over the Eastern Sierra, Bishop, Mammoth. Tell us about the other people that are involved in your efforts.
Yeah, so we've formed like a loose coalition, which has been really amazing because everybody comes in with their different strengths. We have the Sierra Club, we have Trout Unlimited, Center for Biological Diversity, Friends of the Inyo, a lot of local organizations that sort of have different constituencies. And it's really, I think, No Hot Creek Mine and this movement is a great example of how different people can really come together. And we all have to work together to fight this issue.
And how about, are there any tribal members that are also involved in this?
Yeah, so the Kutsutika, there's actually a tribal comment period. Despite there not being a general public comment period, the tribes were able to make comment. So we have the Kutsutika, and we also have the Paiute Shoshone in the area, and then the Benton tribes. And several tribes around here have submitted comments and concerns. And I've also had some Indigenous folks reach out on social media, just sharing their connection with the landscape, their families and ancestors' connection to the landscape as well. And so it's a really important space for local tribes.
And I'm also very curious about, you mentioned there's no general comment period. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, so the first iteration of this fight from 2021 to 2024, there was a public comment period, and they're about 30 days. And when a public comment period comes out, you're allowed to see the mining company's proposal. So the federal government now no longer requires the Forest Service to have a public comment period regarding these exploratory drilling projects. So we know that the mining company submitted the proposal, but we don't have an official public way to share concerns, to share our problems with this issue, to share our love for the place. And with that, we also don't get to see the proposal from Coeur Mining.
And can you explain what's the entity that's in charge of this, the federal government entity?
This exploratory drilling proposal is on Forest Service land, and it's going to be the Inyo National Forest. And they are the ones that make the decision, decide whether which process by which it will be denied or approved, and sort of look at potential impacts because they do have scientists on their team. And they are the ones that ultimately decide whether this project moves forward or not.
And what are some of the steps that you're taking in the meantime and your group? What are some of the things that you are actively doing right now?
So right now we have a couple primary tactics that we're using. And the first is really getting the public to understand what's happening and garner public support. There is a lot to be said in terms of grassroots organizing for having a community that's really unified against a mining project. And so we do a lot of outreach with events, social media, newsletter. Our partners in our coalition are also actively working on spreading information as well. And then the second piece of that is we just launched a business coalition. So we have our local business coalition and then our outdoor industry business coalition. And that really demonstrates that there's a lot of opposition on the economic side to this project and concern that will directly impact our tourist-based economy, our outdoor recreation-based economy, and not just here at the local level, but those larger outdoor organizations as well.
And for folks that are listening to this that are maybe not familiar with Hot Creek, have never been there, but are gathering that this is a very special, beautiful place, what can folks do that are listening to this program to maybe help out?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first and foremost, if you have social media, follow us on Instagram. It's just No Hot Creek Mine. We also have a website with all of this information on there about the impacts, who we are. So that's nohotcreekmine.com. And we have a newsletter you can sign up to. So if you head to our website, we have a button for that. Really sharing your story. We have an adventure advocacy program we're running. So if you are an outdoor enthusiast and you want to become involved with adventure advocacy, coming up with a project at Hot Creek, like a bike tour, and then sharing how that connected you deeper to the land, inspired you to fight. You can also join our business coalition. That information's on our website. And another very helpful element is donating to the cause. Our donations help with stickers. It helps with us putting events on that can further educate people and just helping to provide resources for our team.
And you're there in that community of Mammoth Lakes, which again, it's a tourist-based economy all the way. Give us a sense of the people that you run into there, because people come there from all over the world, don't they?
Yeah, I meet so many people that have come here to fly fish at Hot Creek and also throughout the Sierra. Hot Creek is a pretty challenging place to fish, so I think a lot of people like to come for the challenge. You also meet a lot of people that want to come hiking here. They want to come cycling, really a lot of access to outdoor spaces and those recreation spaces. But we also have a lot of folks that just want to come enjoy the peace and quiet. I teach yoga on Tuesday evenings in town, and there's a lot of folks that they just want to come for a nice yoga class in the mountains and really have the fresh air, the open spaces, and the quiet.
Well, before we let you go, what's your favorite thing about living there and working on saving this wonderful place?
I really love not only being able to go outside and connect to nature. I spend most of my time outside. I recreate a lot. I love cycling, bike touring, hiking. I also recently started fishing, which is pretty exciting. But I really love the community here. People deeply care about this place and they really want to protect it, especially at Hot Creek. And it's been so amazing to just meet everybody and hear their personal stories and really connect on that community level.
Have you tried fly fishing at Hot Creek?
Yes, I have. There's a great guide out here, Chris Leonard. He's our biggest cheerleader for protecting Hot Creek. And he's taken me fishing at Hot Creek a couple times, and I'm starting to get the hang of it. And now I'm really psyched on fishing.
Have you caught your first fish there?
Yes, I did. The first, you know, with a little help from Chris, sure. I was able to catch a fish at Hot Creek the first time we went out.
That's one of the most striking landscapes on the planet.
I know. The iconic view when you're looking down Hot Creek and you're looking at Mount Morrison, it just really takes your breath away. And, you know, like I said, I moved here for one winter and I just haven't left. And that view just really has deepened my love for the Sierra and keeps me here.
Well, Emily Markstein, co-founder and campaign organizer for No Hot Creek Mine, thanks for joining us and sharing your passion for protecting that really special place.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to our guests, Kevin Peterson, operations manager for Hot Creek Ranch, geologist Jeff Ludlow from California Fly Fisher Magazine, and Emily Markstein, co-founder of the No Hot Creek Mine Organization. You can learn more about the ranch at hotcreekranch.com. Check out the recent article about the Hat Creek mine issue in California Fly Fisher Magazine at calflyfisher.com and find out how you can get involved or learn more about the issue at nohotcreekmine.com. And if you've never seen this incredible part of the Western United States, I highly recommend a road trip for you on Highway 395, the magnificent Eastern Sierra Byway. There's a good reason hundreds of movies and commercials have been shot along its route. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of Chico State Enterprises and licensed to California State University Chico in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler, with production assistance from Chico State intern Stefan Barger. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.